Hello, everybody. Today is Saturday, the 10th August, 2024. We are all gathered here for another session of mindfulness for beginners in English conducted by the Nisarana Forest Monastery. And this is the 144th session. And we'd like to welcome, as usual, Venerable Homa Gamadama Kusala Thero for this session. And we would also like to welcome everyone who's participating via Zoom, Facebook live stream, and anyone who'd be watching it later via download. Our program will commence as usual with an in-session mindfulness practice. And this will be followed by a talk by the Venerable Bhante with today's topic, which is planning. And lastly, we will have the Q&A and any reports that have been submitted to you, us by the listeners. And to begin today's session, I would like to invite Venerable Bhante for the in-session practice of mindfulness. Over to you, Bhante.
Thanks, Sonali. Hello, everyone. So today we can take some time to do a sit-in session. For this, you can adjust your seat. Make sure that you are comfortable and balanced. If you feel like it, you can turn on video and join more actively. We are seated and we are comfortable in our posture. Now gently close your eyes and notice the present moment. Certain things might come into your attention. Notice what are they. You may hear surrounding sounds. A variety of sounds come and go. You may feel certain bodily sensations, probably the breathing in your body, or maybe the pressure on your back. Time to time, various thoughts, memories, plans might come to your mind, but we are not encouraging these things. Instead, we recover our mind from these and bring it back to the present moment. Notice the breathing in your body again. Breath goes in and it comes out. Sometimes you feel sleepy. Sometimes certain irritations appear in your body. But among all these things, you are present. You feel the breathing. The breath goes in and it comes out. Let's try to continue this practice for a few more minutes. Okay, everyone, now you can open your eyes again. So that's about 10 minutes of mindful sitting. Just to give you an idea, the suggestion is that you can practice on your own and share the experience about that practice. This is just to give you a guideline of the sitting practice that we do. With that, Sonali, you can take over.
Thank you, Bhante. So next in the agenda, we actually have the Dhamma talk based on the topic for this week, which is planning. I now invite Bhante to start the topic and give us the Dhamma talk.
Hello, everyone. So this week we are having a new topic, a fresh one. This is about planning that we do in our mind. So we'll see how we can relate this topic into the practice and how much we can relate it into the life that we are living. Now, when we think about the behavior of our mind, usually we plan a lot. We try to, you know, move ahead with a lot of planning. We analyze things, we try to solve things, we have so many plans for the future. So that way we work. In our mind, this is the behavior. Time after time, the attention goes to the future things. The attention goes to the future goals that you have to achieve. You analyze the past. Try to avoid such incidents in the future. So this way, repetitively, our mind is in this unknown future. That's how we are. And in the process, we usually forget the present moment. Now, yesterday, there was a Satipatthana program for like 10-15 people, and they tried mindful eating activity. They had some candy or something and they tried it, and afterwards, while giving the feedback, one lady was saying that I have had these sweets before, but it's the very first time that I felt them. I've had them before, but this is the very first time that I have really felt them. The taste, the texture. This is the very first time I felt them. Right? So that's the natural behavior of our mind. We usually do things. We eat our meals. We talk to people. But most of the time, our attention is in some unknown future, while missing the present moment we live. We eat our meals, but we don't feel the taste. We don't enjoy our meals. Our attention is not there. Right? So we do other things. We talk to people, but we don't appreciate the moment that we talk to the person, the other person. We are lost in our mind. We do things, but our attention is somewhere else. So this way we behave. This is the habitual behavior of our mind. Time after time, it goes into different thoughts, memories, ideas, future planning. That way it works. In the process, we miss the present moment. In the process, we miss the taste of the food that we are eating. In the process, we miss the discussion that we are having. In the process, we probably miss the sunset that is in the horizon, right? So this way, we, in our minds, are so attentive or so focused on the future and the planning, right? So in a way, we think that it's good to plan. Most people, they think that they are smart and they have the ability to plan the future. They do so many plans, you know. They plan every little detail of their life. They somehow try to achieve those plans. Somehow, one way or the other, they want to get these plans completed. So that way, in our mind, we behave. We think that it's a skill. It's so smart that we can plan this much. Right? So that's the very idea. Usually smart people, they try to plan a lot. They think that it's a good thing to do. Right? They spend so much time creating such plans. And when something goes wrong, they get this chronic anxiety, trying to, you know, somehow fight it, trying to somehow get the results that they expected. In a way, they want these plans to be perfect. Even a sickness that comes to oneself or a sickness that comes to somebody else, they are not ready to accept it. They say, you can't get sick. That's not how it should be. You should get better soon. You have to get better soon. That way, they don't even accept a sickness that comes their way. They even try to get rid of that, saying that this is not in the plan. Right? So that way, we fight. We chase something. We chase the future, the perfect future that we want. We chase it. But in a way, what we are chasing probably is a ghost in our mind. It's not a real thing. If you really think about the things that you have planned, maybe like 20 years before, when you think about them today, how they have turned out, then you realize most of the plans didn't work as expected. Right? Maybe it is true that we are just chasing ghosts in our mind. It's not something real. All that is real is the present moment. The moment that you are listening to this talk, the moment that your body is breathing, the moment that you feel the taste of the food that you are eating, the moment that you feel the touch of the sole of your feet, that's the only real moment. Whatever you have for the future, whatever you plan for the future, it may as well be chasing a ghost in your mind. Right? So that way, again and again, we do, but we don't get any results out of it. So most people think that it's smart to plan ahead. It's a smart thing to do. Even I remember when I was younger, maybe as a teenager, I was planning a lot, trying to achieve certain things. These things I have to get, these things I need. That way I was planning. Even after graduation, I had to do a planning job as well. You know, it was a ERP planning job, right? So that there too, I was planning. So I too was good in planning, probably like so many years ago. And I remember sometimes, you know, we were creating plans for the company and for the production and everything. One time the owner, he was too overwhelmed by the plans that I have created. So he said, it's too much. You don't have to plan so much. We'll see how it goes. So that was more like a, you know, warning sign that I may have to plan a lot. You know, it was too much. He said it that is too much. That's not how it should be. Right? So that way we try to plan. That way we try to plan. Even in my life, I too was planning a lot. But after a while, maybe after a decade or so, you realize that the plans, they didn't work as you thought. The plans didn't work. The plans wasn't successful. At least the majority of them didn't work. Some of them, they worked, but not according to the exact plan, right? So this way, we do something. It is so comfortable to chase this ghost in our mind. But in reality, it doesn't add that much value, right? People think that it's a smart thing to do, all this planning. But today's quote, it says something else about planning, right? It says life is a process of iteration. I was never smart enough or dumb enough to have a plan for my life, right? So the court questions whether it's a smart thing or a dumb thing to plan a lot. That's the question the court is asking, right? Maybe you feel like it's a smart thing to do. It's a smart thing to do. But in a way, after when you hit probably a midlife, you realize it was a dumb thing to do, right? All these plans, it was a dumb thing to do because at the end of the day, they didn't work, right? So this type of a quote, it suggests that we better focus on the present. That is where the life is happening. Whatever the choices that you make in the present moment, it'll change the future. It's not like it's fixed and constant. It's not how it is. Instead, it is always a process of iteration. Whatever happened in the past, it matters. Whatever happening in the present moment, it matters. All these things will decide the future, right? What we experience in the present, it has passed causes. For the future, the causes are the present. So that way, it is a process of iteration. And if you want to really live your life, you have to live it in the present moment. That's the very idea. That's the very idea, and that's the very training that we are going through. Remember the incident I shared earlier? Those people, they have tried those speeds for so many times. But it's only now, it's only during that program, they really felt the taste of it, the texture of it. So maybe although they ate those speeds before, they were missing that very moment. Only during that activity, they felt, this is how it tastes. This is how the texture is, right? So that type of a life we are living. We live, but we miss most of them. We miss the opportunities in the present moment. And we think about the opportunities in the future. We miss the opportunities in the present moment. And we worry about the opportunities that we missed in the past. So that way, we are always chasing a ghost in our mind. But the practitioner, they are encouraged to bring their attention to the present moment. They have to force it in a way. Initially, it is really hard. A beginner, when they started, they feel it's really hard. Even I remember just this person, probably a few days back, for the very first time, that person practiced mindfulness as mindful walking and sitting. In the discussion, sharing experiences, that person said, I could feel that my mind is in utter chaos. It is all over the place. And the person is asking, why is it? Usually I don't feel this way. Now, when I started practicing mindfulness only, I feel this utter chaos in my mind. So the question is, why? My answer was, now, let's say, a wild horse, when the horse is living in the wild, you can't see that this horse is a wild horse. It is so comfortable. It is so peaceful, freely roaming around. Right? But when you try to catch it, let's say you somehow got hold of it, put a leash and tied it somewhere, what will happen? Now you start to really feel that this creature is a wild creature. Now you start to really feel that this creature is not tamed. Right? In the wild, you don't feel it. The horse is free and comfortable. So it is not showing the wild nature. But when you get hold of it, when you tie it somewhere, then only you'll feel that the horse is really a wild horse, not a tamed one. Same goes to our mind. When we allow our mind to roam freely, it is not showing it wildness. That's why most people, they prefer not practicing. Why? It is much easier. It is much comfortable. They allow their mind to wander wherever it needs. And the mind is not showing any wild nature in the process. But when you start practicing, let's say you try to be mindful, you try to tie your attention into the breath or the steps, then only you will feel how wild this mind is. Then only you will feel that my mind is in utter chaos. That's what that experience was. So for the very first time of your life, you are starting to realize that this mind is wild. This mind is not tamed. Right? So it's a good thing. It's a good realization. It's a good insight into your practice. Gradually, you can work towards taming your mind. You can sit for a while. You can walk for a while. Try to see what you feel in your walking body. Try to see what you feel in your seated body. You may feel the sole of your feet touching the ground. You may feel the breathing while being in seated. So just bring your attention to the breath. Just bring your attention to the steps, the sensation of the steps. And when you do it, next moment you are lost again. Most people, they come and complain. They say that I can't keep my attention with the breath. I can't keep my attention with the steps. That's how they say. But I am asking, can you at least notice one breath, a single breath? Can you notice a single step? Can you notice? Then they say, of course, I can. Then that's your starting point. Don't worry about the mind that is distracted. Instead, start with a single breath. Start with a single step. Try to make it 2-3. The mind goes away, get distracted. But again and again, time after time, you can return back to the walking or back to the breathing. So this is the suggestion when it comes to the practice. And gradually you realize that you are able to be mindful for at least like 10-15 breaths. You are able to be mindful for 10-15 steps. That way your ability to be mindful, it grows. And the practice becomes somewhat comfortable. It is comfortable to walk. It is comfortable to sit. So just make it a habit every day, at least for like 30 minutes. Do a walking session. At least for like 30 minutes, do a sitting session. Make it a part of your daily life. That way you can continue for a few months. Then you realize that the practice, it works. You have to, you know, just appreciate the practice. Just every day do it. It's like it's your relaxing time, or it's more like your self-care time. For 20 minutes, 30 minutes, you just walk in a comfortable manner. The monk who is famous for this mindfulness practice, I think he died few years ago. His name is Thich Nhat Hanh. I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. So he says, walk like you are kissing the earth with your feet. That's the idea he is giving, right? Walk like you are kissing the earth with your feet. That type of approach you can take to the walking. You know, just appreciate that moment. It's your self-care time. It's your relaxing time. Then even while being seated, the breath, you can feel it. You can feel it comfortably. You can appreciate the few minutes that you sit every day. That type of approach you have to take, right? And with that approach, with time, of course, not initially, with time, you realize now your mind is not so interested in planning the future. Still, the plans are there, but it is not so much energetic. The power, it has reduced. The momentum, it has reduced. This change you will feel. The habitual reactions, the habitual planning, they are still there, but you don't go on planning for like a few hours or few days. Within maybe like within few minutes, the thoughts, they scatter. Again, the planning happens, but again, it is not holding. The thoughts get scattered. So this way you realize, although this habitual tendency to plan, is it still there? Your mind is not so much appreciating the planning. Right? That change you can notice. Within few months you can notice. And some people, they think it as a disaster. I used to plan a lot, now I can't. How can I deal with my work? How can I deal with my studies? That way you start to question. But in reality, you don't need so much planning to do your work properly. You don't need so much planning to, you know, do your studies properly. In fact, what you need is the attention towards the present moment. Less planning you do, more attention you will have for the present moment. My attention will be freed for the present moment. And whatever you do, maybe you can do it more effectively, efficiently. At a less time and a cost, you can do them. Why? Because your attention is there. Right? So that type of approach is much better towards life. It's going to be much more relaxing and it's going to be much more comfortable. And it's going to be much more efficient. Right? So they say life is like a dance. When you dance, what's the target? Now, some people, they try to, you know, finish the dance as soon as possible. That's their target. You know, you get started, you do all your moves and somehow finish it quickly. Right? So finishing the dance, that's their target. Or the goal, right? So it's the same way we deal with our life. We think that we have to finish it, you know, get all these things, get it done. That type of approach we take. It's unfortunate, you know, you got time to dance, but you somehow finish it quickly, saying that I want to approach the end of this dance, right? But in reality, let's say dancing, you are appreciating the journey, not the destination, the moment, right? That's why in dancing, when you do it, you feel comfortable, happy in your mind. Why? Because the very process is to appreciate the journey. Even in music, we don't try to reach the end of the symphony. That's not the goal. Instead, simply go with the flow, appreciate the moment. So even the music, it demands your attention to the present moment. That's why when you do dancing, when you do music, you feel comfortable. Because the very activity is demanding your attention to the present moment. It's not about the destination, it's about the journey. Same goes for life. Life is like a dance, right? You don't try to finish it as soon as possible. That's not the target, that's not the goal. Instead, what we do is, we try to appreciate this dance. Every step, every movement, can we appreciate? Can we appreciate? That's the very question, right? So that type of approach is much better towards life. It's going to be much more comfortable and it's going to be much more efficient. Otherwise, we are always trying to reach the end of it. Every day you go to work. What is the target? Somehow finish this day, right? That's the target. The next day also you go. When a week is starting, you feel so much anxiety. Why? Another work week. And Monday early morning, it feels like dying. And some people even die in real, you know. Why? Because they get heart attacks. Monday 8 to 9 is the most likely to get a heart attack, right? Another work week. And somehow you survive Monday, Tuesday. Then the Wednesday, they call it the hump day. Somehow it's over the edge, you know. Now it's only a downward trend, 2 more days to go. Right? So that type of approach we take. We want to finish the work day that we have in front of us. But can we take a different approach? Can we simply appreciate whatever that we are doing? It may be a boring job, of course, but still, can't you appreciate the boring job that you are doing? Can't you enjoy it? That's the very question. Probably that's more towards living than trying to, you know, skip living. Whatever you do, maybe work, can't just simply appreciate the process. Try to be mindful, try to do it. It could be a boring job, but still you can make it interesting for you. When you talk to a person, maybe it's the last time that you get to talk to them. Especially to family members, friends. When you talk to them, imagine this could be the last time that I am talking to this person. And is this the way you want to do it? The question might arise. If it is the last time, is it the way you want to do it? Right? Maybe you are eyeing your phone while talking to them. Your attention is somewhere else. That way we live. But in reality, if you can approach life like a dance, if you can approach life and, you know, appreciate it, then that's the real way. That's why it says life is a process of iteration. Whatever happens, it matters. Whatever the choices that you make, it matters. It is always evolving. It is not constant. Past matters. The choices that you make in the present, it matters. Right? So if you want to change life, this process of iteration, if you want to change the present moment. That is the only way. Not planning the future, not chasing ghosts in your mind. That's not the way. Instead, bring more attention to the present moment. And when you do it, you realize it is really life-changing. Life-changing. And you can do your work and studies much more effectively, efficiently, without, you know, so much planning. Sometimes, of course, the plans are there. I'm not saying that they will vanish 100%. But less power to the plans. probably it's just planning without a planner. Right? Usually when we plan, there's this strong planner. Taking everything personally, trying to boost the ego in the process. But if it is just planning without a planner, what will happen? Then those plans are not so much so serious. They work, it's good. If they don't work, that too is fine. Right? So that type of approach is much better towards life. You still feel the planning, but there is no real planner. You are not taking them so strongly or personally. The ego is somewhat faded away. Right? So that type of a approach, that type of a planning is fine. Thoughts will be there, of course. As long as you live, they will be there. But less power to them, you know. More attention freed for the present moment that you are living. And when you do it, you really feel that there is this some kind of a plan. But it is not fixed all the time. And I am not the sole doer of this plan. Some kind of a plan is there. It is always changing. The plan is always changing. And I am not the sole doer of this plan. Instead, depending on the opportunity, things work. Depending on the surrounding, things work. And your mind is more flexible to accept this surrounding and make the best out of it. That is the important thing. You're accepting the surrounding and trying to make the best out of it. You are not chasing after everything being perfect. That's not the way. You accept things and you somehow find a way in the present moment. You somehow find a solution in the present moment. That type of approach would be much more efficient. It won't appear so glamorous like those perfect plans, but still, it would be much more efficient. So that way, if we can live, I think we can live in much less stress levels. Usually our stress levels are high because of taking things so personally. So personally we take them. We want to somehow achieve them 100%. But in reality, that's not how it works. You have to adjust yourself according to the present situation, present circumstances. And in those circumstances, you can find the best solution. In order for you to find that, you have to be more flexible in your mind. If you have rigid plans, if you have fixed plans, then it won't work. So that's why I said earlier, it's just planning without a planner. Planning is there. Some unknown plan is there. Always evolving, always changing. Depending on the surrounding, the plan appears. But you are not the sole doer of it. Nature has a part. Nature has a big part. The surrounding, the circumstances, it has a big part. Then your intention also has some saying in it. Right, so that type of process, I think it's better to call it planning without a planner. And that approach would be much better towards our life. You have to try and see. Don't just believe my words, just do the practice and see how it is changing you. Whatever the changes happen, they are positive changes. You don't feel it right away, but later you realize now it's positive. What happened for good, right? So that way you can realize that you are living your life, but you are not so stressed. You don't have so many planning in your mind, but still things work quite fine. So that way, I think we can live our life more efficiently, more freely. So that's the idea for today. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Bhante. That was a topic very close to my heart as well. I'm constantly planning. Now, next in the agenda is our reports and the Q&A. For that, I will invite Nadeep to present the reports to Bhante and host the Q&A. Nadeep, over to you.
Thanks, Sonali. Asrai Bhante. I think I'm supposed to present the guidelines first before the reports. Is that right, Sonali?
That's right.
Yeah, okay. For those who are, let me share my screen first.
I have shared the screen already.
All right, cool, thank you. Thanks. So, whoever are aspiring to start mindfulness practice, we have two videos produced with the help of monks from Venerable from Nisanavanaya. One for mindfulness walking and another for mindfulness sitting. First, you are advised to watch these two videos and get the basics thoroughly and understand when to start, how to start. The most important thing is not just watching videos, your practice. So start with a very little amount of time during a set time of the day. You can start early morning or just before, retire before the day. Start as a, like 5 minutes. It is recommended start your mindfulness practice with the mindful sitting, which conducive to your subsequent mindful sitting. Start with the 5 minutes of mindfulness walking, and then you can gradually increase your time, like 5 minutes, 10 minutes, or half an hour. Once you complete your practice for about 2 hours after during a week, you can send us your experiences as a report, what we call a reflection report. You could write your report clearly mentioning the primary object of your mindfulness sitting and primary object of your mindful walking as well. Please include how you start your mindful sitting, whether it is the primary object is your in-breath, out-breath, or rising and falling of your tummy or stomach. And also clearly mention how long approximately you were able to be mindful of your with your primary object. And then if the mind wanders around, how would you know that? How would you know you come back to your primary object of mindfulness? Clearly mention all those points. And also, in your mindful walking, how you start mindful walking, where are the touch point of your feet, and also how the weight shifting between legs. And again, if the mind wandered, how would you know that? And clearly mentioning, how would you know you got back to the primary object of your mindfulness or the body? And also, you could include all the in your daily mindfulness practice as well, at your work, while you're cooking, or doing your professional work as well. To send us this report, we have Google form and email address as well. The report will be presented during the Q&A session, which will be helpful for the practitioner and also the other participants to improve their mindfulness practice as well. So it's highly encourage you to write down all your experiences and share with us and also with the Bhante. Next, I will move to the reports of Sri Bhante. We have two reports received us today. Let me present the first report. Mindful sitting. Sat on cushion and a quick body scan took place. Breath noted near nostrils. In-breath cooler, out-breath warmer. Temperature difference reduced afterwards. Recognized when the mind moved to other objects and the awareness returned to the sensation of breath. The eyes acceptance when primary object is prominent and the eyes acceptance when mind has moved to thoughts or sounds, etc. Cycles of subtle and prominent breath noted. Calmness experienced. Sat for an hour. Mindfulness during the day. Often during household chores, the awareness of feet movements, weight of items held, temperature of the floor or the running water, etc. noted. However, there is an underlying disorganized feeling in the mind. For the past few days, not trying to get rid of it, but observing same. Mistrust and concern noted in mind when far-right violence broke out in the parts of UK recently. Was concerned for safety of two sons. Showed the attachment to family members well in this event. Dear Bhante, look forward to your valuable feedback. Much merits to you. Therwan Saranai. That's the end of the report, Bhante.
Okay. If I focus on the first part first. Now, there's acceptance when your attention is with the primary object. Let's say breath. When your attention is with the breath, there is acceptance. Then, again, when the attention is with a secondary object, maybe like thoughts, still there is acceptance. Right? So that's a good quality that you have noticed. That's maturity in the practice. Initially, the beginners, they have acceptance towards the breath, but they don't have acceptance towards the thoughts. But when you season in your practice, when you mature in your practice, you realize that whether the attention is with the primary object, whether the attention is with the secondary objects, it is fine. The practice continues. Right? So that acceptance is very important. Whatever the object is, you just accept it and continue your mindfulness practice. That approach is much better. And simply, you know, just continue with that acceptance. If the attention is with the breath, that's fine. If the attention is with the thoughts, you still know that you are with thoughts. Then in your daily life also, you feel the walking, you feel the working, you feel the weights lifted, you feel the water. So that way, your practice continues, even in your daily lives. And time to time, certain things appear. Certain problems appear. Certain wars appear. Certain issues appear. So that is natural. And when they appear, you realize how much you are attracted to the family members. How much you fear they are facing some difficulties, right? And that's life. These periods come. And when they come, if you have the ability to observe this disorganized feeling in you, or this anxiety in you, or this chaos in you, that very ability is so precious in such situations. most people, they don't have that ability. They don't have the ability to just be with this disorganized feeling. They don't have the ability to just be with this confusion. They don't have the ability to just be with this chaos. When they don't have that ability, what they do is they go outside. They try to solve it. But the practitioner, they realize that my mind is in fear. My mind is disorganized due to these incidents. My mind is fearing the safety of the people I love, right? So that very observation is what we need. You know that your mind is fearful. You know that your mind is disorganized. And simply have the ability to let it be. Right? Let the disorganized feeling be. Let the fears be. Just live with them again and again, knowing that they are there. Having this ability to observe, simply go through these phases. And after few days, few weeks, the society settles and you realize no longer I have that fear. No longer I have that disorganized feeling. Right? But this opportunity, this incident, this very incident, it gave you an opportunity to observe the real nature of your mind. To observe how attached you are to your family members. To observe how much you fear the safety. Right? So those things are important. Those phases are important in the sense of the practice as well. Only if you have the ability to observe. If you don't know the practice, then those phases can't be beneficial. They are only worrying, fearing, and trying to solve things, getting into more and more confusion, more and more chaos. But for a practitioner, whatever happens, society may be peaceful, society may be in chaos, both the situations are beneficial to a practitioner. And in chaos only we realize our true fears. Through difficulty only we realize the real nature of our mind. When healthy, our mind and body is so comfortable. When sick only, you realize how difficult the mind and body is. Right? So those phases, although we are not going searching for them, although we are not asking for them, when these phases come naturally, it's an opportunity for you to practice. See the fears, see the disorganized nature, see the chaos. That very observation will lift you higher. It will lift you higher. That happens, right? So continue with this practice and you realize soon the society settles and the mind settles as well. But again, there'll be in future another opportunity for you to do the same practice like this in chaos, in disorganized feelings. There'll be another opportunity. So that way, we persist in our practice.
Much merits, Bhante, for the valuable advices. Let me present the second report, which is a short one. Walk-in meditation. Today, I observed the sides of my slippers going up and down as I took steps. I noticed my hands cutting through air as they breezed through. I also noticed the middle bit of my feet was never touching the ground or slippers perfectly, but more area touched it when I put my foot down. That's the report, end of the report, Bhante. I'm not sure whether the other part missing. That's all I can see.
It's a child's report, I think.
Nadia. I see. All right. Okay. Yeah. That's the end of the
Okay.
report, Bhante. Yeah, thank you.
Right. So this is a good observation. Now, usually we are wearing slippers. Usually we are walking a lot, but we don't have this observation. When you are interested in observing these details, you get so much information into your report. That's the first thing. The other thing is that without you even knowing, you are mindful. We have a task. We are observing the details of this walking process. We have a task. We are observing the details of our breath. And as a result, without you even knowing, you are in the present moment. You are mindful. That's the benefit in observing these details. So you can feel the slippers, how they are touching. Certain parts are not touching, right? When you put on the slippers, how that process happens. Usually we think that it's a simple task. But in reality, it is so complicated. We are programmed to do it. We are programmed to do it. But if you do it with attention, if you do it with mindfulness, then you realize the process is so complicated. Putting on slippers. Right? What is how the fingers are supporting it, how the feet is supporting it, how the leg is inserted, all those tiny, tiny details, you can see what a complicated process that is. Sometimes when you meditate for like probably when you do a residential retreat kind of a thing, sometimes these circuits go away temporarily. Right? Then you can't put on slippers. It's hell of a struggle to put on slippers. The circuit is gone, right? And you stand nearby the slippers, but you can't still put them on. Then you have to go through the whole learning process again. Then after a few hours, the circuit comes again. We forget the slippers, right? So many such complicated processes are happening. But we are programmed to do. We don't know, but it is happening. Right? But when you pay attention, you realize how complicated these processes are. Certain parts are touching, certain parts are not touching. Not only the touching parts you feel, but the not touching parts also you feel. Right? So that way, continue this observation. It is said that people like us, maybe every day we are taking 8,000 or so steps daily. Daily 8,000 steps. That's a big number. So how many steps mindfully? That's the question that we have to ask. If you are interested, you can at least catch probably like 300-400. You can catch. And if it is a child, then of course they will catch much more. Right? So that's the very approach. That's the very approach. And the thing you mentioned about feet, certain parts are touching, certain parts are not touching. There's this very nice activity which you can do. Take a couple of A4 papers, get some food coloring or something, apply on your feet, and just walk on those A4 sheets. Sometimes you may recall Buddha walking on lotus flowers. Just after birth, right? Walking on lotus flowers. Similarly, we walk. Maybe you can take 7 A4 sheets and take 7 steps. And when you see the mark of your feet, you realize those certain parts, they have a much stronger mark, strong ink is embedded into the paper. Certain parts, they are gently touching. So it's lighter, a bit lighter. Then certain parts, not touching at all. So empty, right? So that's how the feet, the mark of our feet is done, right? What you observed mindfully, You can feel it. You can. It's an illustration of your observation when you do this type of activity. You can notice which parts are putting a lot of force, pressure, which parts are there gently touching, which parts are not touching, right? So that observation, it will be more like an illustration of that observation that you had in the report. So these ways, it's interesting to keep on practicing. That's the very idea. So thank you for sharing, and we are happy that you are practicing this way.
Thank you very much, Bhante, and thank you for sending us the report. Very nice one. That's all the reports we have received today. As we have a few minutes, I would like to open the discussion for the participant. If you have any questions, this is the time to raise it. Please raise your Zoom hand and we will let you unmute and present the questions. Also, please make use of this time, valuable time, and you hardly get any chance to, you know, talk into your teacher. So, it's highly advised that if you have any questions, please make use of this time. Yes, Ashwini, you can speak now.
So, what you forwarded today as topic was very important to me, because I was always planning about the messages I would put to my best friend, and that prevented me from focusing much on the practice. And the other thing is, I have been practicing meditation for a few hours per day, but it was not very fruitful, I think, with those planning within me. And this sermon by you helped me so much. The other thing I wanted to ask you, Swaminathan, sir, is it okay to be mindful about the negative emotions? Will they increase if I be mindful to my negative emotions? Swaminathan, that's what I wanted to ask.
Okay, the first thing is that although now you have this realization, I am planning so much, and it is distracting me from the present moment, that type of a realization is there. But again, tomorrow, the same planning will be also there, right? That is how the mind works, the habitual behavior of the mind. So what can you do to change it? Not only the realization, but you can work towards it. You can bring your attention to a bodily sensation repetitively. Similar to the earlier report that we heard from the child, that type of approach you have to take. That way only you can change this habitual behavior. Otherwise, you just have the realization today. Again, tomorrow, you'll be in the same planning process, right? Unfortunate, but that's the reality. That is how the mind works. So not only realizing, but you have to do something about it. What can you do? You can simply bring your attention to a bodily sensation and keep doing it. Not only during the formal practice, even in your daily life, repetitively bring your attention to a bodily sensation, something prominent in that particular activity. You don't always have to keep it there. Simply repetitively bring, notice. That's the very idea. Then the second question, I think you are confused about it. Negative thoughts, emotions, if you are mindful, then you are not fueling it. The opposite, what you are doing. Right? If you are not mindful only, you are fueling those negative thoughts, emotions. That's why in darkness, they multiply. But in the light of mindfulness, they can't multiply. Right? So mindfully observing negative thoughts, your understanding is wrong. It's unmindfulness that'll empower those negative thoughts, that'll multiply those negative thoughts, the darkness. The light of mindfulness is always positive. Whatever it is positive. Now even some people say that a sniper, they too are mindful. That way they say. Even Trump, he was targeted now, right? So people say that too is mindfulness. Wrong. Mindfulness is always positive, right? You are not getting caught in thoughts, emotions, simply non-judgmental observation. Now the sniper, are they like that? They are utterly caught in the process. They are utterly wanting to get their target. That's the process they are in. So we have to remember, we have to remind ourselves, if the mindfulness is always positive, right? If you are truly mindful, you are not caught in any of them. What is the opposite? Unmindfulness. The snipers, they have unmindfulness. They are lost in those thoughts, processes. Right? That's why they somehow get the target. That's their goal. But in reality, when you know mindfulness, that is not the nature of real mindfulness. So mindfulness is always positive. You should know the real mindfulness. Otherwise, you may identify unmindfulness as mindfulness. That's what has happened in the Western world. They have unmindfulness, but they identify it as mindfulness. That's the issue, right? So make a note, remind yourself, whatever it is, mindfulness, if you are truly mindful, then it is a positive thing. You may be doing something wrong. Still, if you are mindful, then that mindfulness will have a positive influence. You may be cursing in your mind, but still, if you are mindful, that mindfulness will have a positive influence. You may be killing an animal, but still, if you are mindful, that very mindfulness will have a positive influence, right? So, mindfulness is always positive, that I have to tell you.
Hope that helps, Ashini. Thank you very much for raising your question. Now it's time for Hema Mali, if I pronounce your name correctly. Not sure. Yes. Hema Mali wouldn't want
yes,
to speak.
Bante. Oh, yes,
yeah,
Bante. Avasarai Bante. This is a question on meditation. While meditation, some days I get real Vedana, bodily Vedana. Some days Sukha Vedana. So in those two times, what I have to do is still the present moment, Bante. Can you please advise present moment awareness relating to that, Bante?
Yeah, just be conscious, be mindful of the process. The body is comfortable, pleasant feelings are there. Body is uncomfortable, unpleasant feelings are there. Not only in body, even in mind, there could be...
Yeah, even in mind.
Vedana.
Yeah. Yes,
right? Pain and suffering, the difference. Suffering arises in the mind. Right? So, positive, negative, those things will come and go. The witness is prevailing. So, you have to simply continue. That's all. Continue
that means, Bante, you have to be at the present moment. Even the Vedana is there. Is that the advice, Bante?
No, Vedana is anyway in the present moment. Oh, it won't go to
yes.
the past or the future. Right?
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, continue your observation. As long as you continue your observation, you are present. It could be, the primary object could be the breath or the steps. With that primary, you can continue your observation. You know that the breathing is there, plus pleasant bodily sensation is there. The breathing is there, plus painful bodily sensation is there. That very observation you can continue. I don't know why these doubts arise about the present moment. Why am I present? Is this the present moment? All these doubts will take you away from the present moment. That's the issue. You have to have confidence. If you feel the breath, you are present. If you feel the aching pain in body, you are present. If you feel the pleasant body, you are present. That confidence you have to have. Otherwise, always doubting. Is this the present moment? Is that the present moment? Is present moment somewhere else? Though the doubting won't help it.
Yeah. Vante, this is why I ask you, Vante. Sometimes when you get the present priti vedana, I observe and I felt like it's getting more and more and more. Yeah,
that's fine.
The,
no,
that's the doubt I can't. I want to clear one thing.
Why you are hating the present feelings? Other people will, you know, like it. It's like getting more and more and more pleasant feelings. So why not? Right? Okay. Even the unpleasant feelings, I say, why not? Getting more and more and more unpleasant feelings, why not? Right? Just allow that process to continue. It's pleasant or unpleasant.
Since it's done, Vante, thank you.
Thanks, Simamavi. Now, Hiranti, you can unmute and talk. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Bhante. I just want to clarify something in the previous question. When you said if you are doing something unwholesome and you are mindful, you don't carry on with the unwholesome action. What you would do is you simply avoid that. Is that right?
You tell me.
Yeah, that's what I would do. If I'm going to do something unwholesome, what I would do is I will just simply don't do it.
Okay, so that's bit good. If you can refrain from it, then it's good,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But some people are probably weak people. They can't refrain from it. You know, let's say some addiction is there. And they know that they are doing something wrong.
Okay.
Right, they know that in their mind, they are mindful, but still they can't get rid of it. What can you do? We say, be mindful and just go through the process. What else can you do? Notice. That's why I think last time I mentioned that Osho's idea about, you know, smoke addictions. He recommends mindful smoking. Right? When you hear this, you'll get angry. How can I smoke mindfully? You will say. But that smoker, they can't get rid of the smoking. No. No matter how many determinations you make, as soon as you are weak, you go for the same very addiction. That's what the addictions are. So Osho says, mindfully smoke. Right? How to smoke mindfully? Notice the cigarette. Notice the smoke and notice how it is burning your lungs. And that way, he says, continue. And he says, don't stop after one cigarette, right? Finish a pack, right? If you have more time left, finish a bundle. If you wake up in the middle of the night, don't avoid that opportunity to smoke. So this way you smoke 24/7 and either you die from smoking or you recover. One of those two things will happen, right? So that type of approach, usually the traditional people, they don't agree. But in reality, when you know your addictions, it's not easy to get rid of them. They have to accept. Unfortunately, that is true, right? So then what is the solution? That's the question. Then probably you know in your mind that you are doing something wrong. Anyway, you are doing it because you have no control. Right? So that type of approach is important. It's a long healing process, but still it'll happen. They say this, there's this very nice word in psychology. Paradoxical intention, that is the word they say, right? Paradoxical intention means now smoking is bad, you want to get rid of it. But the advice is, do the smoking mindfully. There's a paradox, right? Even let's say in our mind, when we start meditating, people complain that I get so many thoughts, I can't meditate, right? Because of the thoughts, I can't meditate. My mind is utter confusion. So the advice is given, okay, don't try to be mindful. Don't try to observe the breath. Just be in utter confusion. Just let the thoughts come. We'll have hundreds and hundreds of thoughts today. And when you go and sit and have that approach, you realize the thoughts are no more. Now, you have to go looking for thoughts. They are not there. You feel the breath. Why? Because you gave the opposite intention. Paradoxical intention, they say. So, that type of approach really works with this mind. Because you say, if you don't go there, don't get this, don't have this, the mind is always wanting that forbidden thing. That is the nature. Even Sigmund Freud has this very nice story about it. He went with his wife and son to see some kind of a place, I think a garden or something. And towards the end of the day, they reached the gate. Now almost dark. And suddenly they realized the sun is not there. He's missing. Then now you can't search the entire place, no, right? Mm-hmm. It'll take a day, right? So he asked from his wife, did you tell anything to him? Did you tell him not to go somewhere? And then the wife says, I told him not to go to that waterfall. Okay, then we'll go to the waterfall. Sun is there, right? That is the nature of the mind. When you say don't do it, that's all the mind is thinking. Right? So good that you can refrain, but there are some people, weak people, they can't, you know, get rid of it, right? So for them, there could be some alternative solution. That's what I was referring to. And even me, sometimes I have the same issue. Even after becoming a monk, spending so many years, still certain things are there, can't get rid of. What can you do? Mindfully, I'm letting them happen.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean, Bhante, that you don't bear the consequences, isn't it? It does.
Of course. Yeah. Do so much smoking, you'll die. Definitely.
Yeah. If you drink, then you will also, you know, you are not refraining from intoxicants, isn't it? So those... one has to bear those consequences as well as the health.
Of course. You are talking out of book knowledge, no? That's true. But in reality, the reality is different. If you don't understand it, what can I do?
Yeah. Okay. That's what you meant, yeah. Thank you, Bhante. Therwan Sarnai.
Thank you, Ranthi. I think we are right on time. Would like to thank for the thanks for Bhante and hand over Sonali to conclude the program. Thank you very much, Bhante. Thanks, Sonali.
Thank you, Nadeep, and thank you, Bhante. Thank you to everyone who has sent in the reports as well. It is now time to end the session. So on behalf of the organizers, I would like to thank Venerable Homa Agama Dhamma Kusala Thero for his continued guidance on this program to all of us. And of course, we cannot forget the Chief Abbot of Nesaranwaneya, who initiated this program, Venerable Udiri Agama Dhamma Jeeva Mahathero. So may these merits help them in improving their own practice. And thank you to all the organizers who are maintaining and managing this program. And next, thank you to everyone who has participated via the Zoom link or Facebook live stream, and anyone who would be watching later as well. As usual, the meeting will take place next week at 1 p.m. in Sri Lankan time. And we will wish you all a happy and mindful week ahead. We will now end the session.